No one wants his or her life to end meaninglessly. And that is certainly what happens if there is no life after death or final judgment.
International human rights attorney Dr. John Warwick Montgomery talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Religions other than Christianity provide no assurance in this regard. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is at the very heart of Christianity and is the most compelling reason to believe the claims of Christ to be God come to earth for the salvation of mankind. The evidence for the resurrection is so powerful that it would stand up in any court of law.
You can meet and hear Dr. John Warwick Montgomery making a legal case for the resurrection of Christ at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
These people who are going nuts, screaming at the Supreme Court, pounding on the doors, and doing the same thing at colleges, what happens on campus is not going to stay on campus. It is going to infect the mainstream of our politics.
Most school boards are not responsive to parents any longer, so it's not the same public school. And the game changer really has been just this promotion of the LGBT culture.
When is grace ever not radical? So why do you need to qualify it with the word radical? What's the itch you're trying to scratch here?
These forms of worship come with an inherent enthusiastic theology that is diametrically opposed to the sacraments and the means of grace.
I'm a harpist in Arkansas, and I love Issues Etc.
We hear it again and again. It's probably one of the most often repeated statistics of the Trump era, and that is that 81% of white evangelicals support President Trump. It is almost a nightly repetition, a litany of some kind in the mainstream media, but is it actually true? And if you even resemble or sound like or are an evangelical, you've experienced it before, perhaps the vilification on social media from those who assume simply because you're an evangelical and they've been told 81% of white evangelicals support President Trump, you must support President Trump too. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, October the 18th. We're going to be talking about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump. Terry Mattingly will be our guest a little bit later. We'll talk about a UN report on world population, rather distressing. Dark picture is painted there for those who are paying attention. Rod Dreher, senior editor at the American Conservative, will tell us what he thinks about it. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us for part three of our series on the Christian conscience in Isaiah. Feel free to join us with questions or comments over the course of the next 2 hours. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address, @issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He joins us to talk about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Is it true? We hear it almost every night. It often appears scrolling at the bottom of the page when an evangelical appears on cable news. Is it true that 81% of white evangelicals support President Trump?
Well, the really crucial question there is, what does the word support mean? Because the word support can be taken on a whole lot of different levels. What percentage of evangelicals enthusiastically backed Trump from day one? What percentage of evangelicals kind of decided they liked him once it became apparent that he was going to get the GOP nomination? What percentage of evangelicals bit their lip at the polling place and pulled that lever to vote for him because they felt they had no choice whatsoever? What percentage of white evangelicals didn't vote at all this year? Or what percentage of them voted for third-party candidates? You can see there's all kinds of different levels of reaction to the Donald Trump candidacy in there. And one of the biggest ones is what percentage of the white evangelicals who voted for Donald Trump in their own mind rationalized that vote for the simple reason that they felt they were not voting for him, but voting against Hillary Clinton. They were a part of what we now see is a huge trend in American politics where people are casting their votes against something far more often than they're voting enthusiastically for something. So I think the problem is the press hasn't dug into the fact that, yes, 81% of white evangelicals say they voted for Donald Trump on Election Day. And the exit polls show that. That number is true. Is that the same thing as supported Donald Trump? Is that the same thing as welcomed Donald Trump? Because to me, it seems like this has turned into a kind of a straw man figure that the media is loving to beat. When I was doing interviews for a column I wrote this week, one of the things I heard several times is that when something in our culture happens that makes people really, really mad, they have to have someone to blame it on. And I don't think there's any secret that, let's just say, a high percentage of mainstream journalists in America, specifically in the most influential zip codes, let's just say they weren't happy with the election of Donald Trump. Do you think that's a safe statement?
I think it's safe.
Trump derangement syndrome is one of the phrases that's been attached to what we saw on Twitter and in print in the days after that. These people needed somebody to blame. And I think that somebody has become evangelical Protestants, white evangelical Protestants. There's a fabulous and very important article that has just gone live at Christianity Today, which grew out of some serious polling on these questions by the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton, working with Lifeway Research in Nashville. And they specifically went after this question. What is the reality inside the great myth of the 81% white evangelical vote? The vote is real, but turning that into an expression of what evangelicals think of Donald Trump, his actions, his style, and whatever, that's just too simplistic. Ed Stetzer of the Billy Graham Center, someone you probably have had on your show in the past, I would predict. If not, you should have him on to discuss this poll. Ed said he thinks that the people who keep pounding this have, quote, created a simplistic negative caricature of who evangelicals are right now. It allows lazy people to keep saying that all those evangelicals are all in for Donald Trump. And then here's the part that he said very crisply that I think is the heart of this. They're trying to turn Trump voters into Trump. Trump voters are not Trump. And that's certainly true for most evangelicals. Notice he didn't say all evangelicals. He said most evangelicals, and this poll has got some figures to back that up. But I think the big story here is the 81% figure simply, in the words of this study, the 81% fails to differentiate the motivations, the very different range of motivations that could be found on why people decided they had to vote for Trump.
You say that a recent photo op at the White House is somewhat illustrative of the complicated and very complex relationship that the president has with evangelicals. What happened there?
Well, Have you seen the video? This is when
oh, yes.
the Reverend Andrew Brunson came back. He's just been released from a prison in Turkey. This is a horrible situation. And lots of American activists, a lot of them conservative, a few of them liberal human rights activists, a lot of people were upset about the jailing of this pastor, American pastor, in Turkey. And so we had this situation where he comes back to America, he goes straight to the Oval Office for the photo op with the president who has helped, let's give him credit, had helped put the spotlight on this case and kept it there, in large part because this is a very important issue for a lot of Trump's evangelical Protestant base. And so we have this scene with Brunson saying, is it okay if I pray for you? And Trump says, I think I probably need more prayers than anybody else in this room. He kneels down and he says this very passionate prayer, praying for Trump to be protected from his enemies and those who would undermine him and give him wisdom and strength. It's a very evangelical prayer. And it just ends with, and we bless him. We pray that God will bless him. Well, you know that there were a lot of evangelicals who saw that scene and smiled. But you also know that there were others that went, well, this is a really great photo op to help with the base. I mean, people who took it realistically, right? At least that's how the cynical journalist in me would interpret that scene. What Marvin Alasky of World Magazine, when I interviewed him, called politics by gesture. And he said, let's face it, a lot of things presidents do are symbolic gestures. That because they're president, those gestures become important. Well, the other moment in that photo op that is just perfect, you know, is Trump turning to Brunson and his wife and saying, so who did you vote for? You know, so Trump. I mean, and the wife says, well, yes, I voted for you. And I believe Brunson said that he sent in and had to vote by absentee ballot since he was in prison. But you know that lots of evangelicals got the joke, right? Trump is saying, I'm so political that I'll even ask a guy who just got out of prison if he voted for me. And a lot of people smiled. But then you know that lots of evangelicals didn't smile. It's just like a perfect little staged parable. I mean, you could create that as a Saturday Night Live skit, you know, and it would work. Or at least I think it would.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. Stay tuned for more. Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $120 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make your $120 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The the 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkins. This is Issues Etc. On this Thursday afternoon, October the 18th, we're talking about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, other than sheer laziness, or it's easier to kind of to continue to pump this mantra about the 81% figure being kind of wholehearted, blind support for the president, why hasn't some enterprising journalist said, you know, if it really is that big of a deal, and it really is that key to the electoral success of this man that no one thought would ever in a million years be president, why don't I just dig into the complexities of the thing and find out what it really means and who voted for him and why when they identify as evangelical? It'd be a book.
Well, more than that, I mean, for people who work at daily newspapers, the minute you begin to realize that there are fault lines, there are cracks within that 81%, wouldn't understanding where those cracks are help you perhaps predict what would happen in terms of future stories when Trump does things that are really, really good or really, really bad? I mean, I've been pointing out for several years now that a lot of the very best writing critiquing Trump has been done by cultural and moral conservatives. I mean, the very fact that someone as conservative as a Marvin Olasky came out, and I would think at quite a bit of risk to his magazine, to World Magazine, and openly opposed Trump through the primaries, I would think that that's pretty amazing. I don't know too many cultural conservatives who are more consistent in their views than Marvin Olasky. I think the other one that should have gotten attention, and I could name lots of folks here, but the fact that Albert Mohler Jr., the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, another incredibly articulate commentator on American life and cultural issues, and arguably the leader of kind of the Southern Baptist thinking academic elite on the conservative side of things, or at least a spokesperson or spokesman for a lot of them. Why didn't it get anybody's attention that Albert Mohler opposed Donald Trump through this whole thing? But once you understood that these very important figures did not support Trump or did not endorse Trump, let alone stand up and enthusiastically fight for Trump, I would think that understanding why those people believed what they believed was a way to help predict where future stories might break. Does that make sense? In other words, yes, there were people, and the poll from the Billy Graham Center points this out. There are lots of people, evangelical Protestants and frankly liberals and others, who in this era have not only decided that they're going to vote against specific people instead of for specific people. They basically have rationalized this in their mind as saying that they're going to have to vote pragmatically to try to push the ball forward on specific issues that matter to them, even if that means looking the other way in terms of the faults of specific candidates. Hashtag Trump. There's a statement in the analysis that Stetzer wrote for CT that I think sums this up. A majority of evangelicals by belief, and that is a term they're using for even if people don't self-identify as evangelical, people whose beliefs show that on core issues they're evangelicals. A majority of evangelicals by belief agreed that their political support should be tied more to praising or criticizing specific issues rather than individual political leaders, and that was 59%. Now, remember that in this poll, when they say evangelicals by belief, that includes African Americans, Latinos, and a lot of other people. Let me give you an example of a story that I'm really intrigued by, and I've been haunted by it ever since the election. Trump, needless to say, did not win by a huge margin. There were a lot of states in which evangelical Protestants are not very powerful, like the Rust Belt, in which clearly a lot of people other voted for him. You can't blame Wisconsin on white evangelical Protestants, I would not think. But I've always been intrigued with Florida and Trump's narrow victory there, and I would love to see exit polls, if anybody has them, that would show us the difference between Latino evangelical Pentecostal voters and ordinary Latino voters. Wouldn't it be amazing if Donald Trump won the presidency because of the votes of Latino evangelicals, not white evangelicals? Didn't that strike you as an intriguing story if that turned out to be true?
Absolutely.
But would that fit the stereotype? Does that fit the great monolithic straw man of the 81% white evangelical vote on which we can blame the fall of our civilization? Life is so much more complex than that. And as I think I've mentioned to listeners before, I live in one of the most Republican parts of America, here in the hills of East Tennessee. And driving around Oak Ridge, Tennessee, in the weeks before the election, I think I saw two or three Trump signs in the yards of ordinary voters in this region. And maybe that's just my route to and from church, the gym, and the grocery store and barbecue places. I don't know. But it said something to me. And what it said was that in an area where about 85% of the voters voted for Trump in a lot of precincts, those people were still not very excited about putting the Trump name in their front yards and saying they embraced him. I've mentioned before a friend of mine, not an evangelical because he's Eastern Orthodox, but a friend of mine who basically said he went in, he pulled the lever to vote for Trump, and he went out to his car and got sick. Well, that's not being all in for Donald Trump, to say the least. And this guy would, he would jump at the first opportunity to vote for someone that he considered a real, consistent, cultural, and moral conservative for the White House. He would love to vote for someone other than Donald Trump. But on that day, that was what the choice he felt he had to make. We've talked about this before, I know.
You talked earlier about the stereotype or the caricature or the meta-narrative, however you want to describe
this.
It has kind of two facets to it. One is of Trump himself. That is, he lives up to his stereotype on a daily basis.
Yeah. He never disappoints,
right.
Does he?
He does. And so I don't want to explore that end of it.
That's what I meant with the previous thing about, you know, you got this lovely scene with the pastor praying for him, and you've also got him turning to them and saying, so who did you vote for? Yeah, he just doesn't miss a note.
The other facet of that stereotype is of the evangelical that we've been discussing here. If you're in the average kind of newspaper newsroom, and if they have a poster child that says evangelical, what is it? What is the stereotype that operates there? Not uniformly, obviously, but what is the picture that springs to mind often with journalists when they hear that word evangelical? What does that person look like?
Well, here's what's funny. Stop and think about this for a second. I never thought that we would have someone worse than Pat Robertson as the straw man for the world of evangelical Protestantism. Coming up on like 15 years ago, I wrote a piece for the Poynter Institute's Journalism Continuing Education website. And I wrote this piece and made a case that it was time to excommunicate Pat Robertson. It was time to stop quoting Pat Robertson. The media had gotten to the point where by quoting Pat Robertson over and over and over, they didn't have to think anymore about religious conservatives. All they had to do was cue up the latest, in my personal opinion, crazy Pat Robertson quote. And that summed it all up. Well, that was apparently the last decade. In this decade, it's the pastor of First Baptist in Dallas. Or maybe it's the latest quote from Franklin Graham, which you can use conveniently pulled away from lots of other things he has had to say in critiquing Trump. We could go on and on. There's a long list of people that fit this. But that's become the new Pat Robertson. And when in doubt, you still have Pat Robertson, who still continues to say things. And once again, these are straw men. And so I think at this point that if journalists sat down with a printed out copy of this new survey from the Billy Graham Center and Lifeway, and they marked up, like, say, what are my top 10 takeaways from this survey, marked it up with a highlighter pen, not only would they get some good stories out of it, if they're open to covering some good stories, but I think it might push the 81% back. But I don't know. Maybe that assumes there are political writers out there who want to dig deeper. I will stress at this point that I don't see as much straw man use of the 81% and then without any explanation of what it really means. I do not see that as much among religion writers as I see it among political writers and then, of course, in the world of commentary. But that's something that Get Religion has been preaching over and over for 15 years now, which is that when you get religion writers and you get people who know the beat and they have experience on the beat and they have really big Rolodexes of sources, you tend to get more of the nuance of this stuff as well.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump on this Thursday afternoon. About another 10 minutes left with him, and then Rod Dreher will join us to discuss a UN report on world population. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards. EmmanuelPress.us.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Terry, we are, by my count, just under 3 weeks away from a Tuesday, November 6th, which will mark the midterm elections. And the big question, I think, looming in the media's mind is, are we going to get it wrong again? Because 2 years ago, their polling, their predictions were almost uniformly, not just inaccurate, but in some cases, 180 degrees out of whack. They don't want that to happen again. Elections are big news, and they do honestly want to be accurate in the way they report that and the way that they prognosticate about it. So they've got to be wondering about that mythical 81% who all are wearing their red hats every day, as they picture them, perhaps, and what that's going to mean for the midterms. Wouldn't that also motivate a little more digging into why evangelicals vote the way they do? As you have pointed already, by and large, we're talking about most of them voting strategically on certain issues.
Well, I think that might vary from state to state, depending on what the issues are in the Senate races. And whatever happens with the House, I think most people would say that Republicans most want to hang on to the Senate. And to be perfectly brutal about it, that's because there are some elderly members of the U.S. Supreme Court. Which brings us to another one of the topics that I think reporters should be digging into, like you suggest. In this CT piece, which I'm doing, I hope I'm doing very good public relations for it, because it's a very important survey for people to look at, especially journalists. In this thing, there's a lot of evidence that evangelicals didn't all vote for Trump for the same reasons. Now, the people I know, almost without exception, they all said that the key thing, maybe this is just my friends, the key thing was that if they voted for Trump, they did so because of the Supreme Court. And the minute you say Supreme Court, that's code language for moral and social issues. It means abortion. It means defense of the free practice of religious convictions under the First Amendment. It means a lot of things. This survey indicates that inside that 81%, there are some intriguing divisions. And one of them, simply put, is that a lot of party loyalty has obviously developed among the GOP, which some people would say stands for God's Own Party. In other words, a lot of evangelicals, in the end, voted for Trump because they're Republicans, and they felt that was what they had to do. I would argue that a lot of those voters would be among the folks who supported Trump early on or switched to him once he became the GOP nominee. The fact that they happen to believe a lot of things that Republicans ordinarily believe make them logical, Republican voters. What's intriguing to me, though, is what do you do with the people who don't feel comfortable with the Republican Party a lot of the time? And what about folks who who are cultural conservatives, but instead of in the logical evangelical pews, you find them in mainline Protestant pews, or you find them in Roman Catholic pews, or you even find them in Eastern Orthodox pews, although there's not a whole lot of us. I think reporters need to probe to what degree the court and moral and social issues are providing some of the swing votes. Because let's face it, in a lot of American elections, the massive swing vote is not evangelicals. Evangelicals are pretty easy to predict. What matters is how many of them turn out in a given election. The big swing vote in American politics remains Roman Catholics. I remember a long time ago that the great pollster and scholar John C. Green of Akron, the University of Akron, he made a comment, yeah, this is going to be another one of those elections that all turns down to Catholics in Ohio who go to Mass once a week versus Catholics in Ohio who go to Mass once a month. And what he meant there was within the Catholic world, there are the same kind of divisions based on religiosity that we see in the evangelical world, where there's lots of evidence, including a fascinating Cato Institute poll that was written up at the New York Times, that evangelical leaders and the most active church-going, ministry-oriented evangelicals were not the people who jumped on the Trump train early. They're among his weakest supporters, and they disagree with him on refugees and immigration and a host of other issues, and they wince and groan when he turns to someone who just got out of prison and said, so, who'd you vote for? The same thing is happening among Catholics. And you put Catholics and evangelicals together, that's a lot of voters. I would have to say that probing the fault lines in those two groups are going to be essential when we try to figure out who's going to maintain control of the Senate and thus the process going toward the future of the next chairs in the U.S. Supreme Court.
So finally, with about 30 seconds here, Terry, how would you, in a nutshell, explain the incuriosity of so many in the media about that 81% Trump?
They're mad, and they have to have someone to blame. And this is the polling and statistical equivalent of the handmaid's costumes that show up at every single event that has anything to do with women, abortion, family life, or whatever. It's turned into a club with which to beat up the people that they blame the most for giving them Donald Trump, even if that doesn't explain who helped him win the states that actually put him in the White House. It's anger, I think, is the key.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate in the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Rod Dreher is going to join us, senior editor at the American Conservative. We'll be talking about a UN report on world population. He says it signals something dire, not just for population, but for family and for civilization as well. Stay tuned.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization one student at a time.
October is Pastor Appreciation Month. And to mark the occasion, the Lutheran Witness is tackling ministry and mental health. Some articles focus on life in the ministry. Others deal with emotional wellness generally. Still others, including what are perhaps the most powerful pieces of writing in this power-packed issue, grapple with the complicated and often thorny relationship between the two. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Concordia University, Wisconsin is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During October, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Concordia University, Wisconsin. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. St. John Lutheran, San Benito, Texas. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Redeemer Lutheran, Gresham, Oregon. Bethlehem Lutheran, Fairborn, Ohio. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, St. Labore, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Calvary Lutheran, Ray, Colorado. And Trinity Lutheran, Savannah, Georgia. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.